Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the All EN call. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we'll conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the one followed by the four on your telephone. If you need to reach an operator at any time, please press star zero. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Thursday, March 6th, 2014. I would now like to turn the conference over to Felix Stump. Please go ahead.
Thanks very much, Demetra. Hi, everyone. My name is Felix Stump. I'm a Deputy Project Director for the Operations Support Manager contract on the Ticket to Work program. We do have a pretty good agenda today that I'll just go over in a second. I want to welcome everyone for dialing into the March All-EN call. Thanks very much for making time in your day to join us. I will just give a couple brief updates and get those out of the way and then turn the call over to Sally Rhodes, who will talk a little bit about some upcoming training opportunities and some additional materials related to the 503 regulations. And then the main event for today's call will be Pam Walker giving her presentation. She's from an EN called Alliance Professional Services. Finally, I'll come back and just talk to you a little bit about of the beneficiary's ability to do an online benefits verification, and then we'll hopefully have plenty of time to take your questions. So with that, I just want to go ahead and give you the update on the APOR, the Annual Performance Outcome Report. As you probably know, that was due actually on February 15th. Thank you to everyone that submitted that report in a timely manner. We do have a fair number of ENs that hadn't responded by that due date, over 200. And at that point, we will those ENs will likely soon get a notice from Social Security urging your response. If you have not responded, you can still do so, and we invite you please to do so. That information is very important for us to move forward, and in impacts how your EN, what information is reflected for your EN on the beneficiary directory that they use sometimes when selecting a service provider. So it is important to you as well. Want to let you know about, I guess, where we are currently with ticket assignment processing. As of a couple days ago, March 4th, we were actually working through individual work plans, IWPs, and request for a ticket assignment that was submitted through March 3rd. So it looks like we're about a day or two caught up. So there shouldn't be any backlog that you're experiencing with your ticket assignment request. And a couple brief highlights from some of the messages that we've sent out in the last month since the last EN call. Most of them were reminders about various calls, this one included. Reminders or notices about us being closed because we've had a fair bit of weather for the winter this year so far. But there was one I think you might be interested in. There's a new tool on our website called the Monthly Earnings Estimator. And what that does is it translates a beneficiary's income information into appropriate earnings levels, whether it's trial work level, SGA, below or above. And it provides you estimates for both Social Security Supplemental Security Income, SSI, and beneficiaries who are on SSDI, Social Security Disability Insurance. And particularly, it lets you enter in information that you're getting from a pay stub related to the pay amount, the pay date, the earnings period, the beginning and end date. It takes all that information and gives you back a response as to whether or not that beneficiary qualifies as over trial work or over SGA for a given month. And that can be sometimes confusing between SSI and SSDI because they're counted differently, particularly when you have a pay period that spans 1 month to the next and those days can be prorated. This tool does that all for you and hopefully can allow you to make a more informed payment request when you're getting ready to look at your beneficiary's earnings and decide whether or not to send in that request. Some other important announcements were for our Ticket Training Tuesdays for this month, and I want to plug this coming month's topics. This past couple days ago, we had Ticket Program Basics, and in case you're an EM that's that's kind of an old hand at this now, and you're wondering whether why we still do these basics and ticket 101 type trainings. We actually had one of our record turnouts this past Tuesday for new ENs or new staff or folks just wanting refresher training, so that's still popular. And next week, the 11th and the following the 18th, next week will be Ask the Experts, which will feature Sally Rhodes, and then the next week's Karen Davidson. Sally's going to talk some more about that in just a moment, because I'm about ready to turn it over to her. Sally Rhodes, take it away.
Thank you, Felix. I wanted to provide a couple of updates, too, on a couple of other things before I get into the 503 developments. One, since Felix mentioned the monthly earnings estimator, I also want to tell you about a new resource that's on our website. It's a payment denial reasons guide. It describes all of the different types of payment denial reasons, explains what circumstances would lead to that type of denial, and provides tips on how to avoid each. Visit the Information Center and look under Resource Documents and then Payments, and you'll see it. I also wanted to let you know about an important policy change that affects employment with federal contractors and subcontractors. Many of you may already have heard that the President signed an executive order in February that establishes a minimum wage for federal contractor and subcontractor employees. The executive order takes effect on January the 1st, 2015. It establishes a minimum wage of $10.10 an hour for individuals hired under federal contracts and subcontracts awarded in response to announcements of availability of funding issued after the January 1, 2015 deadline. So that's something to look at in the future. Of particular interest to us is the fact that this minimum wage will apply to individuals with disabilities hired by federal contractors and subcontractors, and that includes those that are currently working under subminimum wage certificates. So that's another thing to be looking forward to in the future. Mentioning again what Felix said about the Ticket Training Tuesdays, March 11th, Ask the Experts will actually be me, Karen Davis, and Keitra Hill. It's intended to be an informal session where you can ask questions and we'll try to generate some discussion around a variety of different topics. The March 18th session will be a presentation by Karen Davison on essential tools for EN success. As many of you may know, Karen operated an EN some time ago, and during that time she provided training to ENs throughout California. She had a training program that was 24 essential tools for EN startup. She's adding some of the new tools to the that we've added to the awesome website to that and updated the presentation, and I think you'll get a lot of very useful information out of that. And now to the 503 update. Just as a reminder that the 503 rules go into effect less than three weeks from now, March the 24th. You all know that these rules prohibit federal contractors and subcontractors from discriminating in employment against individuals with disabilities and require that they take affirmative action in recruiting, hiring, training, promoting, and retaining qualified individuals with disabilities. Of particular interest is the 7% utilization goal for employing individuals with disabilities. In layman's terms, what this really means is that federal contractors and subcontractors should be working towards a goal of having individuals with disabilities make up at least 7% of their entire workforce. That means that the goal applies not only to employees working under the federal contract or subcontract, but to all of the employees of that organization. We're expecting to see a significant increase in employment opportunities for individuals with disabilities as a result of this over the next few years. The rules also require federal contractors to invite applicants and current employees to voluntarily self-identify as individuals with disabilities. The Department of Labor's Office of Federal Contract Compliance Programs has now posted the form that would be used for the purposes of self-identification. Although contractors can create their own form, they have to use language exactly as it is presented in this official OFCCP form. And the form and the legal opinion confirming that self-identification process does not violate the Americans with Disabilities Act is available on the 503 section of the OFCCP website. And just as a reminder, the 503 webinars hosted by OFCCP and groups like the Job Accommodation Network are being archived on their websites. I wanted to mention that the February 26th JAN webinar that was titled Making Online Application Systems Accessible may be of particular interest to ENs and state ER agencies. This webinar included a lot of useful tips and resources for making websites, PowerPoints, and online information accessible. Although the focus was on the online application process accessibility, the tips and materials are useful for any organization that works with individuals with disabilities. To access that webinar, you visit the JAN website at http://askjan.org/webcast/archive/indexfedcon.htm. I think you really will find some of that information useful. And if you haven't already done so, I also strongly encourage you to visit Awesome's dedicated 503 webpage. You can visit the Information Center and look for the section 503 or simply enter search 503 in the search function when you go on the website. We have been receiving a lot of questions from ENs about how to locate federal contractors. We covered that in our November 503 Readiness webinar series, and we also have on our website a practical guide on step-by-step guide to locating federal contractors on the Federal Procurement Data System Next Generation. In addition, just this week, a number of new resources have been posted to the Awesome Section 503 page. The National Pre-Award Registry is a list of federal contractors that OFCCP has found to be in compliance with Equal Employment Opportunity Regulations that OFCCP is mandated to enforce. You will also find new resources related to Section 503 that are targeted for employers, including links to tools that employers can use to access their readiness, to assess their readiness, and launch and improve their plans for hiring individuals with disabilities and veterans. We've also posted information on five job posting services and job banks specializing in recruiting individuals with disabilities, links to three publications describing best practices in employment for people with disabilities, information on four programs designed for individuals with disabilities in post-secondary education and recent graduates, and then four additional sources of information on labor market participation rate and the unemployment rate. I really encourage you to check out the website and look at some of these new resources. Today's 503 presentation by Pam Walker on Outreach wraps up our six-month EN Section 503 Training and Resources series. The presentations for the series will be posted on the 503 page of the Awesome website. What's next? To continue preparing our Ticket to Work service providers to take advantage of the new rules governing 503, the Awesome will be hosting a community of practice on Section 503. The COP will involve calls on the first Wednesday of every month for 6 months, for a six-month period. Each call will be EN-led and open to all ENs and all state VR agencies. Mark your calendars for the first call, which is scheduled for April the 2nd from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time. The Section 503 COP will provide insight into prevailing ideas and the current and evolving level of 503 knowledge and applied understanding throughout our provider network. It is being designed as a learning forum for ENs and state VR agencies to discuss 503 implementation strategies and brainstorm on how to address implementation barriers and emerging problems and issues. The COP will serve as a hub for communication, mentoring, and coaching among peers, providing the opportunity to gather information on promising and effective practices in management, service provision, customer service, and working with federal contractors and subcontractors. Awesome will evaluate the practices that are discussed and, as deemed appropriate, will publish them for consideration by other service providers. We believe that participation in the 503 CO3 will help our ticket provider network move from 503 knowledge, attainment, and information sharing to implementation strategies that use this knowledge along with lessons learned through EN and VR experiences Be looking for the announcement from Awesome, inviting you to participate in the 503 COP. In preparation for the Section 503 effective date and the launch of the 503 Community of Practice, the Awesome is interested in gauging the current level of understanding and the new 503 of the new 503 rules within our provider network, and in assessing whether ENs and state VR agencies are actually taking steps to translate this knowledge and understanding into action plans. To assist us in this endeavor, we're going to be asking each of you to complete a brief 503 knowledge assessment survey. The link to the survey will be provided at the end of the PowerPoint in the presentation that you're going to hear in just a moment. The survey responses are due back to Awesome by March the 21st. And now I'd like to introduce Pam Walker, CEO of Alliance Professional Services, LLC, Employment Network. Pam will be sharing her practical insights and strategies for conducting outreach to take advantage of the new 503 rules. I want to thank you, Pam, for your willingness to share your thoughts and your tips and your practical knowledge. The session is called Section 503, Outreach, Capacity, Candidates, and Contractors. Pam, it's all yours.
Thank you so much, Sally, and welcome everybody to the call. I want to thank you for an opportunity to share information about participating in 503 from a ticket provider standpoint. This is an exciting opportunity, and we want to make the most out of it, and we need to make sure that we are prepared to participate in 503. It's important to remember that we're really all in this together. As ticket service providers, we are being offered an opportunity to assist federal contractors with recruitment, placement, and retention of well-qualified applicants. How we complete these tasks can create an overall perception of the ticket program and the ticket service providers. So I know we all want to provide a positive experience for the employers and the beneficiaries that we serve. So pre-planning is the first step to successful participation in 503. And a lot of what I will be mentioning today during this presentation will be food for thought. It's to get you thinking about what you need to do and how you need to prepare in order to participate in 503. Let's take a look at slide 2. The learning objective today are all related to the development and implementation of a successful plan for participation in 503. We will address ideas for capacity, handling the additional workload by having staff tools, processes, and backup plans in place, how to go about finding qualified candidates for position, and how to become directly involved with placement opportunities with federal contractors. At the end of the presentation, we will have a few minutes to share and hear from others who may have found creative ways to plan for participation in 503. Slide 3, please. As you consider participating in 503, take a good look at your organization's current process and determine whether you have the staff, tools, and processes in place to handle the additional workload. It's a good idea to think about your current processes and what may need to be reworked, who will be responsible for the 503-related tasks. As examples, you will need to consider, you know, whether or not you have a dedicated person to handle recruitment and contact with federal contractor employers. What does your intake method for obtaining information from employers about open positions look like? What will you do with the information once you get it? Who will post it on your website? If so, who will be responsible for maintaining the open position information at the website? How will you provide the information to your ticket holders or determine which ticket holders you should contact with regard to the position? How will you find qualified applicants? Who will be responsible for the candidate search and what method will be used? As you can see, there's a lot of questions that we need to answer before we jump in with both feet. If you plan to work with other organizations, who from your organization will be responsible for sharing job information with your ticket partners, and how will those referrals be made? Has a consent form been developed, and how will you know if it's been signed? Has the disability disclosure issue been addressed with the beneficiary? What is the notification process if the beneficiary is hired? You know, it is just a lot to consider. The message I'm trying to convey here is that if you think through the process and determine the challenges in advance, you can plan for those challenges by creating processes, developing tools, and planning backup strategies before you need them instead of the, you know, heat of the battle. Once you've thought through the processes, it's always a good idea to put them on paper and then plan a dress rehearsal. Sometimes things look really good on paper, and you think you've got it all worked out, but it's not until you actually walk through the process that you will be able to find areas that may not work as well as you have planned, and it gives you an opportunity to reevaluate and make needed changes to ensure a smooth workflow. Some ideas to consider to help you with all of this is to create a simple flow chart so that each of your team members understand the overall intake to placement to payment process when working with 503. Look for unique ways for your organization to streamline the processes and find extra time. As an example, our organization has a VIP phone number for our current ticket holders, and we have a separate phone number that serves as a hotline for employers. Then we have a standard phone number where people who call who are interested in learning more about ticket call, and they're able to hear information about ticket without speaking directly with a person while they're trying to determine whether or not they're a good fit for the services that we provide. By having different phone numbers or different extensions during periods when our call volumes are very high, it allows our current ticket holders and employers to reach us quickly without having to leave messages on the same line as the callers who are interested in learning more information about ticket. So look at ways to provide multiple opportunities for individuals who are interested in work to reach your organization. Many ENs offer interest forms at their websites where beneficiaries who are interested in ticket can provide information about themselves and what types of assistance they need. The announcement-only lines can be used to explain the ticket program, and based on the services you provide, you can help the beneficiaries determine if they are likely to benefit from the services your organization offers. You can also offer, like, group ticket orientations twice a month with invitations going out to those individuals who have submitted interest forms from your website, you know, if they appear to be a good fit. And you can create any forms or documents you think that are going to be needed for the 503 process and have them reviewed by those individuals who will be using the forms, such as ticket partners or employers. So the big issue is going to be making sure that you have a plan in place, that you have a way to find the resources that you need to be successful, and that you have beneficiaries, qualified beneficiaries, to place in those jobs. So the more time you can spend doing that type of work and reducing the time that you spend doing general administrative work or finding qualified ticket holders is going to benefit you. So as you're going through the process, try to determine, you know, where you can save some time to spend in areas related to 503. Slide 4, please. Here are some other ideas you might want to consider. For most ticket service providers, the biggest concept change with the 503 will be going from a process of searching for jobs based on an individual's education and experience to a process of searching for individuals who have the experience and qualifications to fill an employer-specific need. That's hard to say. This will require access to a lot more ticket holders than most of us have available, which is why I mentioned a minute ago about different ways to allow potential ticket holders to get their information into you. this will require access to a lot of ticket holders, and it's going to make it very difficult for those ENs who do not have the capacity to serve a large number of ticket holders. So we have found it's very helpful to develop both a formal and informal partnership with VR One Stops and Employment Networks and other community organizations who can also help you locate individuals that are interested in going back to work and who have qualifications that may help you fill a job that you have open. If the current workload will not allow your organization to accept a large number of tickets, you might want to consider offering ticket holders an opportunity to either send in a resume or a method for providing basic information about their background, their areas of expertise, and their geographical location, even if you don't immediately accept their ticket. I guess you could kind of look at that as a wait list. But if you develop a method for storing and searching that information for the individuals you currently serve, as well as those on the wait list, you may be in a better position to find good candidates as opportunities become available. You know, if you've got a job out there and you don't have anybody that's qualified for that job, maybe some of these people who have provided you with their resumes or provided an interest form may be a good fit for the job, so that would, you know, give you an opportunity to call them and talk to them about ticket and see if they are qualified and if they are interested in the job. Having a way to research the wait list and your resumes does not have to be difficult. It can be anything from a computer folder with the information stored as Word documents where you can just search text, or it can be something as complex as a database system that performs automated client job matching for you. Anything you can automate is good. But you, regardless of whether you do it manually or you have an automated system, if you're participating in 503, you're going to need to have a way to match your open positions that the employer has given you with qualified candidates in your system. And here's some ideas to consider, and I don't think I've mentioned it on this call today, but NENA, which is the National Employment Network Association, is a wonderful organization and provides ticket service providers methods for networking with each other. The organization encourages learning, sharing, best practices, and helping each other. And I bring this up because there are instances where NENA members will have jobs that they're unable to fill. And one way that we can fill those jobs is by reaching out to other NENA members or other employment networks. So when that situation occurs where we have a job that we're trying to fill and we don't have any qualified ticket holders available, we're able to send out an email to other ENs describing the job requirements and the location to see if anyone has a candidate they would like to refer to us. Although the beneficiary has to sign a consent form before information can be shared between ENs, getting that documentation is pretty easy. Another option would be to make a contact list of other organizations who also provide services to individuals with disabilities. Many times these organizations have websites or on-site bulletin boards where they can post jobs. So reach out to them, make contact, and see what resources they may have available, you know, for you. Bottom line, you want to make sure that networking with other organizations is included in the 503 toolbox. Also, depending on the amount of time that you have to fill positions for a federal contractor or an employer in general, you can also do the obvious marketing mail-outs or set up robocalls to recruit individuals with specific skill sets based on individuals who live near that employer's location. So even though I like to think outside the box, you never want to give up the obvious when it can be useful. And I apologize for my voice going today. I guess it's all this icy weather we've had. Slide 5, please. Okay. Employers have many organizations that they can choose from to obtain assistance. Federal contractors and employers in general for many years have worked with their state VR offices and their local one-stops, so they're really familiar with those organizations. However, my experience has been that employers, including federal contractors, really know very little about the ticket program. In recent months, I've contacted a lot of federal contractors, and most that I contacted were not even aware that the ticket program existed. So it's almost like we're going to have to change that one employer at a time. So before you begin getting the word out, step back and take a look at your organization, the services that you're able to provide to both beneficiaries and to employers, and then realistically determine how much time and staff you have available. You know, what information can you share about the services you offer, and how can you sell the benefits of those services to a federal contractor? You don't want to try to recruit a contractor if you're not going to be able to support them once you have them on board with you. What federal contractors are a good fit for your organization, you know, look at their size and the number of openings they generally have available, you know, in a month or over a year's time. I mean, although I'm sure we would all love to work with a huge federal contractor or contractors and have an opportunity to fill tens of thousands of jobs every year, most of us don't have the capacity to immediately do that. So it's going to take some investigation on our part to determine who we should be working with, who we can provide services to. And I know the task can be daunting, especially when, you know, you look at some of these federal contractor lists. Some are national, some are local, some are huge, some are, you know, mom-and-pop organizations. So there's, you know, there's a lot to choose from. So my suggestion is to investigate and find a couple of contractors that are of interest to you. Invite them to participate in a pilot project. It makes it much easier if you start off, you know, with one or two and then sell the benefits. It doesn't cost them anything. Plus, you know, you can throw out there that if they participate in the pilot, they'll get a little publicity. You can do some newspaper articles, you know, acknowledging that they are participating in a pilot with your organization, which also gets your organization, you know, in the news. So there is a public relations marketing value for federal contractors or employers in general that choose to pilot with you. And that's in addition to the free job postings and the pre-screening and the recruiting, you know, everything that you can offer. And most of that, they're currently paying someone to do. So if it's an HR person within their organization that's doing it, by providing the services that you offer, you're making their job easier. And if they contract that work out to a staffing agency, then, you know, you're saving them money as well. So there's a lot of benefits to piloting with you, and you just have to know what you are able to provide and make sure that you share that with the federal contractor. The benefit to you of doing a pilot, obviously, other than the placements is, you know, the primary thing, but it also gives you a reference, a federal contractor reference, who can speak about their experience with your organization. So when the time comes where you want to grow, you have a reference that says, you know, yeah, we do this, and this is how it works, and it's worked out great. So that's something to consider that's a benefit to ticket providers. Another idea that came up is to create a little competition. If you're not sure which federal contractor to approach, consider attending something like a Chamber of Commerce meeting. Ask in advance for a little time to speak, and this gives you an opportunity to share information not only about your organization but about ticket, and let them know that you're looking for a federal contractor for a 503 pilot project in your area. You can also put a notice in your local newspaper explaining that you're expanding and you're looking for a federal contractor to participate in a pilot project. It's really neat because when you do that, the federal contractors actually come to you versus you having to, you know, do a lot of preliminary screening and looking at sizes and that type of thing. When they come to you, you only have to look at, you know, maybe 10 or 12, whereas if you're trying to do the research, then, you know, you're looking at a lot larger numbers than that. So by doing something like that, it may save you some time and energy as well. Another employment network mentioned that they had an open house where they invited federal contractors to come in and hear about the services that they offer. So that may be an option. And then another thing that our organization did was we selected some federal contractors that were of interest to us, and we sent them out invitations to participate in a teleconference to learn more about the services and how we can save them time and money. So that might be something you want to consider. So, again, think outside the box. Slide 6, please. Again, the opportunity to participate in 503 is huge, but it's going to require a lot of planning and dedication to be successful. I feel like some of it will be trial and error. You come up with a good idea, and you have to test it before you know if it'll work. So that's another good reason to have a pilot, you know, with just a couple of federal contractors on the front end. But let's continue to learn and share from each other, because I know if we do that, we're going to figure all this out, and we're going to exceed all expectations. Slide 7, please. Additional information, including information about the prior 503 training provided over the last few months, can be found at the website or the web link provided on slide 7. And slide 8 is just my contact information. If you have any questions or would like additional information on any of the ideas that I've mentioned today, I can put you in touch with the employment networks who are doing that type of work, and I'm sure they would be glad to visit with you. And our last slide here. The Section 503 final rule announced in August 2013 will be effective March 24th, 2014. There is additional information coming out about a community of practice the OSM is sponsoring for Section 503, and I think Sally touched on that a little bit at the beginning of the teleconference today. And Sally also shared some resource information earlier in the call, but I'm going to go in and mention some wrap-up reminders on our last slide. I want to encourage everyone to complete the five-question survey so that future 503 information and resource sharing can be shaped to the current 503 knowledge level and the needs of the EN audience. So you can participate in the survey by either clicking on the survey link or copying and pasting the link into your browser. So, Felix, before my voice completely goes, I'm going to turn it back over to you.
Thank you very much, Pam. You did a wonderful job. I couldn't even hear anything wrong about your voice. Thank you very much for joining us again. And before opening up the lines, I just wanted to take a brief moment, I promise, to remind you all about the new online benefits verification tool that Social Security beneficiaries can take advantage of. They can go to MySSA, mysssa.gov, and enroll, sign up there, and take a look at their benefits verification. and rather than get a printed letter mailed out to them or having to pick one up at the local field office. In fact, anybody, any citizen that has a Social Security number, I think, and has a work history, can go to the SSA website, mysSA.gov, and complete this same enrollment process. As a matter of fact, not only did I want to encourage you to in turn encourage your beneficiaries to sign up and take a look at that benefits verification, but you yourselves, you or your staff, I encourage you to go and go through that process yourself. It's pretty quick. I did it a couple weeks ago. It's pretty straightforward, and it verifies your identification in some pretty interesting ways. You answer some questions about some of the information they have on file for you, and then you get access, and you can take a look at your entire earnings history, and it gives you some of the same information that that annual letter from Social Security does about what would happen if you yourself were to go on disability and how much that benefit would be at this point. Not only will you be able to learn that for yourself, but also having gone through it yourself, you can help better educate beneficiaries how to do the same. And with that, I'll go ahead. Thanks, Sally and Pam, once again, and ask Demetra to go ahead and open up for questions.
Certainly. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to register for a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You'll hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you'd like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. Once again, to register for a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone.
While we have some questions queuing up, hopefully, I did want to address one that came in the chat really at the top of the call, as I mentioned, the APOR reminder. Paul Luttrell asked when ENs might know about the future changes to this year's APOR that we would be collecting at the beginning of next year. Would we be able to know that soon? We actually are still, as you can imagine, still going through the responses from this year. So I think what we would do is, with Social Security, take those responses, go through them once we have as many responses as we're going to have, take a look at what that might mean, and then make any changes for next year if we need to. I can't say it would be anytime soon necessarily, but we will try this year to let the EN community know as soon as we can, once we have a final idea of what next year's APOR is going to be. So I don't know what that timeline would be. I don't think it would be very soon, but we will try to give you as much heads up as we can. Any questions coming over the line?
As a reminder, please press the 1 followed by the 4 to register for a question. We do have a question registered from the line of Paul Luttrell. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Very good presentation today, Felix and Pam and Sally. Excellent job, excellent information. My question is related to the Employer Recruitment Resource Directory. In our case, here in New Mexico, we've tried to register to get on that on the ERRD about 7 or 8 times, and it's never shown up. And I just went on the directory yesterday, and there's only one company in the whole state of New Mexico that's on there, and I know there have been dozens that have submitted to be put on there. Can you update us on, and maybe New Mexico is the only problem, I don't know, but a lot of people think New Mexico is not part of the United States, maybe that's it. Does anybody have any updates on what might be going on there or what we can do to get on the directory?
Sally, do you know anything about that? This is Felix. I don't personally have an update.
No, I don't, but I would suggest maybe. I think there's you can submit questions through the OSCCP's 503 webpage, and I think you might want to let them know, Paul, if you've tried that many times that it hasn't been successful and other ENs in New Mexico have. I would definitely submit something through that to let them know directly. I discussed this with Darlene Dwyer on our staff earlier today, and she's going to try and see if she can follow up maybe with Bob Williams or something.
Okay. Well, just we've done some follow-up, not on the website, but with our OFCCP rep here in Albuquerque, and he's at a loss as to what happened. He's contacted the national office, and they haven't given him an answer.
No, I don't know. That's why I would go through the website, because that would go directly to whoever's monitoring from the national level of that website.
Okay, I'll do that. Thanks, Sally.
And I think you can imagine that when you submit it, it would probably take them several weeks to upload the information. They're probably uploading it, you know, who knows, once a month, maybe less often than that. I don't know.
Right.
So allow some time, but that does sound, if you've tried that many times, I think it's time to kind of alert them.
Right. Well, thanks. That's a good idea. I'll do that.
Our next question comes from the line of Joyce Weddle. Please go ahead.
Hi, Joyce.
Hi. I just want to clarify something, because one of my other staff has mostly been listening to these calls. As an employment network, we have to first determine if we have to follow the 503 rules ourselves based upon the requirements of how much we have received in income and et cetera, et cetera. And we have to apply those rules to ourselves, but then as an EN, we're also trying to place people into jobs of the other federal contractors. Is that correct?
Bayless, you want me to go out on a limb on this one?
Sure. Yeah, I'd rather, better you than me.
It's not like I've never been out on a limb before. First of all, let's just say if you have any other federal contract other than what you're calling your ticket to work agreement a contract, you know, you definitely, if you have any other federal funding, yes, you're going to be under the 503 rules.
Okay.
We have asked OFCCP to give us a ruling on whether or not employment networks come under the 503 rules. At this point, we have been told that in terms of SSA's position, you need to follow the requirements of the EN request for quotation. It will probably be updated in the future. They haven't told me that. I'm going to assume that maybe once 503 becomes effective, they may consider updating it, particularly if OFCCP decides that they rule that, yes, you are covered. But at this point, you need to go by the affirmative action requirements in the EN RFQ.
Okay. Well, we also answered another question. As an agency, we do some federal probation stuff, so we'll have to follow then.
Yeah, I think people need to always remember that if you have other federal contracts, you're going to come under it, okay?
Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you.
Okay. Do I still have a job?
You're good. No, I think I'll join you very bravely in from the rear of the ranks, out of that room. Any other questions, Demetra?
Our next question comes from the line of Susan Webb. Please go ahead.
Hi, everybody. You didn't think you were going to escape without hearing from me today, did you?
Really quick, I just want to say I might need to retreat from the limb. Go ahead, Susan.
Well, I was just going to say I don't work for you all, so I can go out on the limb without worrying. I want to respond to that question that just came up, because the rule does, the actual regulation, the OFCCP reg does kind of address employment networks kind of in a roundabout way. I think your answer was really good, Sally, but I think it's right that if you have another contract besides being a ticket to work provider, then you do follow the OFCCP rules if you have more than 50 or more employees. But you have to follow the rules even if you don't, and you still have this contract above $50,000. You're right in terms of we got to follow the BPA requirements, but from the federal rule requirements, we still have to follow that regardless. What the OFCCP rules kind of get around and say about this is within as the requirements for doing outreach for employees that we have to hire, it says that if you are an employment network under the ticket to work, that you don't necessarily have the most stringent outreach requirements that other contractors have, such as using the one-stops or going to VR, that you can use pretty much your own outreach within your employment network if that's enough to satisfy the requirements for the utilization goals. If that makes sense? But that is one thing that they do address in the rules with regard to our obligation as an EN. So I hope that just makes it muddier than anything.
And also, just to remind people that this utilization, 7% utilization goal is something to work towards. It's not like on April the 1st, 7% of your workforce has to be people with disabilities or any other federal, any federal contractor.
But they are going to look at that, and, you know, I know it's at a quota, but if you aren't demonstrating, and this is pretty much for other contractors, I know we would do it anyway, but if a federal contractor cannot demonstrate that they have done adequate outreach and adequate hiring, et cetera, it's still going to be scrutinized. It's not like you can say, oh, well, I did the best I could, which is one of the key reasons that they're now asking us to invite self-identification pre-employment, because prior to that, employers would say, well, I did the best I can, they're just not applying for the jobs. But there was no data to indicate that they were doing an adequate job of outreach because there was no obligation to capture that data pre-offer. So that's why that was added. So,
right.
Yes, it's very clear that it's not a quota, but it is also very, very clear that they are going to monitor very closely your outreach efforts and how you track it internally and all that kind of stuff.
And I wouldn't be surprised in the future if it isn't taken into consideration when future contracts are being considered.
Well, let's hope, because that's what we're here to do, right?
That is what we're hoping for, yes.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much, Susan. We have a couple minutes left. Anybody else have any questions?
We do have a follow-up question from the line of Joyce Weddle. Please go ahead.
I have one other question. Hopefully not as much as the last one cost problems, but this shouldn't put you out on a limb, I don't think.
All right.
If someone self-identifies as disabled, and I probably could read about this, but I thought you guys could answer it quicker, what's required to verify that? I mean, like, let's say someone has MS. Now, do they consider disabled even though they still work a 40-hour week job, da-da-da-da. I mean, is there some kind of requirement that for the disability of self-identification?
This is Felix. I'll try this one. And Sally, please, or Pam, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't believe there is a verification required beyond a self-identification.
Okay. No, there is. If you look at the form, you'll see that it just asks people to self-identify. The form is to be kept separate from their regular personnel records. It actually says, do you have a disability or have you ever had a disability? I know that Nina did some really good comments on that form and raising some issues, and I don't know if Susan wants to talk about that. I think we're running out of time, but I don't think nobody's going to go behind people and start checking as far as I know.
Okay, thank you.
And we do have another follow-up question from the line of Susan Webb. Please go ahead.
Okay, I'll chime in. No, there is absolutely no requirement, and in fact, the language of the self-identification prohibits an employer from asking about the nature of the disability, just whether you have a disability. And it defines that a little bit on that form. But, Sally, you're right. I mean, we did send in a lot of modifications to that form because we were real concerned about it. But one of the things that came up on the very first training call we did came from a question from an EN who asked that very thing. What's to prevent people from identifying as having a disability who really do not? And that's an excellent question and one that we never really got an answer to. Other than the fact that we don't want them asking what it is for obvious reasons. So the enforcement of this could be kind of tricky. The rule does allow an employer to identify a disability by vision, looking at a person, and if they do have an obvious disability, regardless of what that person puts on the form, the employer can make that determination, which is sort of interesting. But no, there is no verification, and quite honestly, I'm not sure we want one.
Right. And I don't know necessarily that there would be an incentive for employees to wrongly
Well,
claim
that it says that the employer cannot coerce
right.
or there's another word too, but suppose an employer says, okay, we're doing a survey of our incumbent employees. We have to do this every, 5 years or something. And for anybody who fills out the form for us, we'll go, you know, and identify us, we'll give you a $50 gas card. I mean, there are possible scenarios where an employer could do that. And so does that fall under the definition of coercion? Some say yes, some say no. So I guess the answer to from my perspective is let's stay tuned and kind of look at it and see what happens. But better that they identify and feel comfortable doing it than not.
Right, right. And it seems like the chances are much greater for a false negative than they are a false positive if you're looking at overall numbers and how real they are.
Yeah, I agree.
Thank you very much, Susan.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it looks like we're just about the top of the hour. So are there any questions already in queue, Demetra?
We are showing another follow-up question.
All right, let's do that one, and then we'll wrap it up after that.
The follow-up question comes from Joyce Weddle. Please go ahead.
Intensive mental health counseling agency. So that's
why
I wanted to know that self-identification, because a lot of times there's people who work in the field who experience those same self issues. And like Susan said, they don't necessarily want to self-identify. So I just wanted to know. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks very much. And now I'll go ahead and take this opportunity to close the call. Thank you, everybody, for dialing in. The chat on the GaddyPlace link was pretty active, so I appreciate everybody's participation there as well. Thanks again, and looking forward to warmer weather the next time we talk in April. Have a good day.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your lines.